Welcome to this serving of Legal Typist's BYOB podcast, hosted by yours truly, Andrea Canavino. Today's podcast is sponsored by OneBox Unified Messaging Service. OneBox helps small to medium-sized businesses organize and coordinate incoming calls, voicemails, and faxes, all with no equipment to purchase, install, or maintain, and no sign-up or cancellation fees. OneBox is the tech that gets you securely mobile fast. Stay tuned to the end of this podcast to learn more about OneBox and receive a special offer just for BYOB listeners. In today's BYOB, I interview Ben Shore, principal of Roland & Shore, an IT consultancy firm with offices in Hawaii and California. Ben is also the author of Outlook 2007 for Lawyers. Ben and I discuss digital security, from the tech to the processes any business needs to consider when using technology of today. Ben shares with us his observations and the services and products he recommends to his client base of law firms and small businesses. Now grab your beverage of choice and let the calls go to voicemail. For the next 20 minutes or so, hang with Ben and I virtually while we speak some geek and give you a practical education about digital security.
Three of your favorite five digital security tips that if you're a person that's online, that's working, you know, from a home-based office or from small law firm, for instance, what would you say would be the number one security tip that you would give anybody who's kind of going digital?
The number one security tip for somebody going digital, somebody in a small office or remote would probably be encryption. There are a lot of tools that can do it, some of them paid, some of them free. If you're looking for something on a budget, then I would definitely spend a little time and get to know TrueCrypt. TrueCrypt, TrueCrypt, which you can get from TrueCrypt.com, I believe.
Okay.
And it's free. It's a great tool for encrypting flash drives and hard drives and laptops and all that kind of thing. You can encrypt individual files. You can encrypt entire drives. And it's a great security tool so that, you know, on that occasion where if you do a lot of work with flash drives, which a lot of attorneys and solos and folks who work on the road do, then, you know, you might want to spend the money on an Iron Key, which is a great hardware encrypted flash drive. But if you don't have the budget for an Iron Key, it is a military-level encrypted, I mean, John Simic has one, and it's a big hunk of actual metal. I mean, it's easily the heaviest flash drive I've ever held in my hand physically, but it also has hardware encryption on it so that, you know, somebody else gets a hold of your Iron Key and can't access the files that are on it. But you can also do, if you use something like TrueCrypt, you can get a very good level of encryption for, you know, just the amount of time it takes you to figure out how to use TrueCrypt.
Correct. Okay.
On your flash drives. You can also, again, encrypt your laptop hard drives, which I strongly recommend. In fact, no, in our organization, we don't allow laptops in the field that are unencrypted.
Right.
We don't allow client data on mobile devices that are unencrypted. And that's specifically for that reason. You never know when somebody's going to break into your car or, you know, swipe in front of you at a restaurant or at the airport or somewhere.
Right.
And once that mobile device is out there, you know.
It's out there.
That would be the big one, is for people who are mobile and traveling and working remotely, and that includes working from home, I would definitely have encryption on all your devices.
Okay.
At least all of your devices that hold any client data.
Or any financial data.
Anything you wouldn't want the wrong people to get their hands on.
Right.
I would definitely have the encryption on those. The other thing would be probably to be very careful about be very cognizant of where your data is. And we get a lot of these, you know, very techie attorneys these days who are carrying mobile devices, and they've got Gmail, and they've got, you know, all these different services that they're using. And it gets really easy, really fast to lose track of where your documents are.
Right.
Because you've emailed them to yourself, you know, on your Gmail, and you sent a copy to the client, and the client replied, and you read that reply on your BlackBerry, and so you downloaded that attachment to your BlackBerry, and pretty soon you've got five copies of that document in three different places, and, you know, that can wreak havoc on your document retention plans.
Right.
Even if they're encrypted, you know, if your document retention plan calls for a document to be expired in 7 years, you'd hate for an old copy of it to show up in your Gmail, you know, or whatever.
Right.
So,
stop saying Gmail. Stop saying Gmail. You're freaking me out.
Well, you know, they're just one of many. You know,
if you have a paid account with Google, then you may want to consider, you know, using Gmail or Google Docs if you have a paid account. But I would strongly urge people who are thinking of using Google for free. No, don't do it.
Yeah. Well, I have a Gmail account. I use it for personal stuff.
Right.
I don't object to Gmail in any way. I don't object to Google Docs when it's properly used, either paid or free.
Mm-hmm.
But I would never put client data in Google Docs.
Right.
Because we've already had a couple of instances where, due to configuration issues, the security on Google Docs is compromised.
Okay.
And so I would never put confidential client data in a third party's hands like that. At least I certainly wouldn't do it casually.
Right.
Specifically because, all it takes is for them to configure one thing wrong and suddenly, your documents are at least temporarily exposed to people who have no business seeing them.
Correct.
And that, in our business, when we're dealing with confidential client work product, is very serious.
Right.
If it's your kid's soccer schedule, who cares?
Right. And that's the kind of thing that I hear all the time. It's like, oh, Andrea, you work with lawyers, you work with highly confidential stuff. I don't work with that kind of stuff. And I agree, and there's a lot of times where, any kind of freed service that allows you to collaborate or communicate with others and, take care of the things that need taken care of, that's true. So mostly what I say is you don't use the free services for anything that is business core dependent. Like if you can't get out your documents, we were talking about it earlier, even with the online practice management software as a service, if you can't get at your stuff because Google's decided, oops, you're a spammer, we're shutting you down. And then you go, but I'm not a spammer. How long do you think you're going to take to convince Google of that, number one? And even in the terms of service, Google's response can be, oh, something happened with our server. Just sign up for a new account. And that's it. You're done.
Yeah, I'm always, I'm a little old school. I like to keep my core software and data in-house. It's very important to me to have control of my data. I will admit that my firm uses an online accounting system, but I will also tell you that we have a local data dump of all of our accounting data that we do on a very regular basis, every few days or every week. I think it's weekly, actually.
Right.
And so if our online accounting service happens to go away somehow, we have a full copy of all of our accounting data
that's up to date that you could populate a different service or a different...
At the most somewhere else we could.
Right. So.
And so we're not dependent on them.
Correct.
Got to have the backups. And that's actually, I guess, the other one which I shouldn't gloss over, which is probably the most important security tip for anybody, is backup.
I have that on my website. Back it up.
I once went so far in a session to say, if you haven't backed it up, then you don't deserve to have it.
Oh, that's a good one. Ooh. I may have to quote you on that one on Twitter.
Oh yeah, it's not just a matter of we just had this situation happen for one of our clients. Their CEO had put critical or mission critical documents in his My Documents folder on his C drive on his workstation. And even though they have a full server infrastructure with all kinds of secure shares and all that, but he had chosen to save these crucial documents in My Documents folder. And as is going to happen to everybody eventually, his hard drive died. And it then became a big matter of how are we going to recover this stuff? Can we get it back? Because it wasn't backed up, because it was his local workstation and not his server where it should have been.
Right.
And we see that a lot. People store their stuff on the C drive, and then they're surprised when their C drive dies.
Well, they're surprised that somehow they think that their C drive is somehow getting backed up when they do, like, a network backup. And I've seen that, too, with people who leave programs open. And they think that the backup is going to somehow magically close the program so it can do the backup of that data, and it doesn't.
Right. And the C drives, a C drive on a workstation on a network, it can be backed up, but usually it's not. It's usually not. There are ways,
and that's because firm policy is that you save all documents to the network.
Exactly, which is where all business documents.
Right.
They want to save their kid's soccer schedule to the C drive, I don't care.
Right.
But they have to understand that eventually that C drive will die. And when you buy a hard drive at retail, there is a number right on the box called the MTBF number, which where the manufacturers tell you that's the mean time between failure. The manufacturer is telling you on the box when you buy it, this drive is expected to die in this many hours of service, after this many hours.
Right.
It's rated in thousands of hours. They're saying 50,000 hours, this drive is going to die.
Right.
So, everybody needs to understand that all hard drives are going to die eventually. So, with a C drive on your local workstation, where there's usually no redundancy and there's often generally no backups, it's not a good place to put mission-critical documents. So if you're solo, if you're a mobile, you know, if you've got a laptop, it's a very unusual laptop that has redundant hard drives in it. So, you know, I can understand if you're very mobile and you're traveling and you're on airplanes and, you know, maybe you're not connected to a network very often and so you need to store things to a C drive, but if you're doing that, that doesn't mean you can't still back things up.
Right.
To a flash drive, to an external device. You know,
something.
To an internet service of some kind, like Mozy or somebody if you had to.
Right. Well, I would caution people about the online, because I know a lot of solo people think, oh, I have my online backup through Mozy or through Carbonite, and I always try to caution them that, I kind of say that's like your last line of defense. If your physical location has some catastrophic event to it and you have no choice but to buy a new machine and back up your data from your online thing, first of all, you have to understand you're going to have to buy your programs again. If you don't have your programs or you don't have the software licenses, that was the first thing I learned. You know, just put the license number right with the disk itself. Otherwise, when you go to install, you're not going to be able to find it. But you have to rebuild your machine with all of its programs, and then you have to wait the up to 3 days, 3 to 5 to 7 days it takes for your actual data to come back down from the online server. So it is a process, and I say use it as a last resort. My favorite is the little Maxter OneTouch, my external hard drive. And that's my first line of defense. If my hard drive dies, then I can just back up from there. But I'm actually getting to the point where I'm looking to image my hard drive so I don't have to install my software ever again, and it just swaps right over to the new hard drive. And it's just the easiest out there to do it. But that's my next upgrade in my backup plan.
Absolutely. Our images are great. We frequently will have clients, when they get a new computer, we'll get the computer all set up for them, you know, brand new out of the box, first day, they've got all their software, we've got all the software installed, we've got it all configured the way they like it, but they haven't started actually using it yet, you know, it's just brand new. And right then, we'll grab an image of that.
Right.
So that at any moment, we could just snap it right back to that configuration again.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. You know who else makes a great product for that is Acronis.
Right. Oh, that's like your standard, right? Yeah, Acronis. Everybody knows. I'm sorry, everybody doesn't know that one. But if you ever heard of imaging or imaging a drive for backup purposes, then you probably heard of them.
Yeah, and Symantec has their Ghost product, which is fine.
Right.
I prefer the Acronis product myself. That's my personal preference. But you know, there are of course other products. There's also a couple of open source ones out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have used a couple of the open source ones, but most of the open source ones I found were just very clunky. And so I think Acronis has a really nice interface on it, which is one of the reasons I like it. It's really easy to use. It does the job. It's very fast.
Okay.
The other thing we used it for not too long ago other than just backup was when a client had half a dozen machines to deploy. They had a half a dozen new workstations.
Oh.
So we set one of them up, cloned that, basically grabbed an image of that, and then just pushed that image out to the other five workstations. And we were able to get six workstations configured in a matter of a couple of hours.
Wow. Oh, that's good.
One by one. So that was a nice thing. And that way you can make sure that the workstations are all consistent, you know, that we've all had this when you lined up a bunch of machines assembly line fashion or you're deploying a whole lot of machines and whoops, we forgot to put, you know, the certain utility or macros or whatever on that machine, or we forgot to load the print drivers on that machine, and you know, then you deploy the machines and then you spend half a day walking around
making sure that it's got everything that it's supposed to and that it, you know, runs the way it's supposed to.
Exactly. But when you work off an image or if you restore off an image because you've made a backup image, then you don't have to worry about that because your backup image includes everything. It's everything.
Perfect. So it makes everybody's life easier.
Everybody's life easier.
And easier is what it's all about with the tech, isn't it?
Yeah, so the other thing I would tell mobile users is don't neglect firewalls. You know, there's a lot of folks who are going to, you know, they go to hotels, they go to, you know, all kinds of different places when they're mobile, even if they're a solo or a small firm or if they're working from home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a lot of attorneys who do telework where they have an office in downtown, but they work 1 or 2 days a week from home
just right. So
they don't have to fight the traffic and don't burn the gasoline and whatever. They work from home a couple of days a week or they work from home in the morning and then go to the office in the afternoon. They think that, you know, the office has this big industrial firewall because the hackers want to break into the office. But there's no reason for me to have a firewall at home, they think, because all it's
right. Just,
you know, cable modem. It's just Roadrunner, it's just DSL, whatever it is.
Right.
But really, you need to have a firewall of some kind on the client side, too.
Right.
Even at home, even on the road.
Of course you do. It's kind of funny. I tell people that Wi-Fi is like the thing where they go to the big box chain stores and the little geeky guy tells them, oh, here, just go and plug this in. And it's one of the things that they're like, you know, they may not be tech-comfortable people, but for some strange reason, they get talked into Wi-Fi. And then they go home, and they plug in everything where it says to, and they get a signal, and they go, yay, okay, I must have done everything right. And then they never set a password for it. And then it's like, no, you still have more stuff you have to do. So.
Yeah, or they never change the default password.
Right.
Yeah. They think, oh, it's got a password on it already. Yeah, if it's a linked system, the password is admin. How scared are you now that I know what your password is?
Okay, everybody knows that. It's kind of like everyone knows default is owner.
Yeah. We all know what the you know, everybody who works in this business knows what the default password is on the wireless access point. So you've got to change your default password. But you've got to have the firewall to begin with, too.
Right.
I still see people who just plug directly into their cable modem and think that they're done. And that's, that's pretty scary.
It is pretty scary. Because I don't think a lot of people understand. It's not like people are looking to attack, but people are looking for open access points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, you have somebody that wants to send out to a spam list. You have somebody who's a spammer. And, you know, they get shut down from legitimate points for spamming, and people know it. So they're constantly looking for open ports where they can go in and send out this spam. And if they can get into your wireless connection, then they can use your resources to send out their spam. And all they have to do is drive up and down the block and see if they connect to anybody while they're in their car.
So. Yeah, they can do it that way, or they come in over the internet.
Right. But even not so much come in, but if your account gets shut down because some spammer drives down your block and you haven't locked them out from your wireless access point, your cable or whoever your ISP is going to shut you down. And it's going to take you a couple of days to straighten that out as well. So it's just always better to set it up right from the start.
Definitely.
And I'd say if you don't rate yourself a solid 6.5 on a geek scale of 1 to 10, then you need to find a local tech and have them do it for you.
Or a 14-year-old.
No, I hate that. People tell me all the time, oh, my nephew, my grandson, the kid down the block. I'm like, no, please. I know these guys may be really good because they've had Game Boys in their hands since they were practically born, but that does not necessarily make for somebody you need to be having counseling you on something as important as this. That's just me. I say hire a professional.
I was joking, of course.
Oh, okay. I was like, oh, no, don't say that. People say it to me all the time. Oh, my nephew's really good with this stuff. Really?
Oh, no, we used to refer to it as... We used to refer to this as brother-in-law syndrome. Everybody's brother-in-law is a computer expert.
Yes.
In fact, we used to find that our business went way up right after Thanksgiving and Christmas and other big holidays because everybody's brother-in-law came into town, and while the brother-in-law was in town, he decided he would be helpful and fix their computers.
Oh.
And the following week, when nothing worked, they would call us, and we would have to come in and undo what the brother-in-law did because he was being helpful in fixing their computers.
It's bad, I know. You don't let anybody monkey with your machine. This is your bread and butter. This is, you know, one of the first things I tell people who want to be a virtual assistant is you have to have a dedicated machine. I recommend it's a desktop and not a laptop, various reasons, including, you know, laptops have a tendency to be dropped and physically, you know, when you're a transcriptionist, you're pounding away at a keyboard. So, but I say it to them all the time, and I say this is not where the kiddies check Webkinz. This is not where the hubster goes online to check your bank balance. This is a dedicated work machine, and the only person that should have access to it is you. So, because in the end, if you're a transcriptionist and you're working from home and that machine goes down, you're out of work. And that's the scary thing, and it's really something, you know, whether you're an attorney or you're a transcriptionist or a web-based professional, if your computer goes down, you don't know the sinking feeling until you see the blue screen of death, and then that's where, again, the backups come in, and you're thankful that you've put in place a process to get yourself back up as much as possible.
Sure.
So.
No, that's really an issue also for attorneys who are working from home. You know, if you're connecting to your office or even if you're not, far too many of them let the computer they use at home to do their work become the family computer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you'd be amazed at the things I found on people's computers because, you know, their kids are surfing all kinds of, you know, sites. Some of them are pretty dangerous. You know, they're downloading pirated MP3 files, and, you know, along with those MP3 files, they're getting spyware and all kinds of other things.
Okay.
You know, and if your son or daughter has just infected your machine with spyware, and then you sit down and do some confidential client work product on it,
guess what happens?
You know, all the potential for bad things there.
Right.
So you definitely want to, you know, be polite, but go ahead and spend the money and get a separate computer for the family. It's worth it.
Oh, absolutely, because, again, even if, you know, you have the office and it's, the machine isn't your bread and butter, it takes time and resources to reconfigure a machine and to fix a machine once it's busted. And if you, it's kind of like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. If only you are touching that machine, then only you know that if something happens to it, it was something that you did. And I've gotten it down to the point where I can identify what it is that has infected my machine. Like Adobe sent something through once, and then MS Messenger sent through something once. Because when you only have the bare minimum of what it is that you need to be working on your machine, you can pretty much narrow it down to what it is that caused the problem in the first place. So.
Yeah, and a lot of the the more things you install on your computer, the slower it's going to be.
Right. And not only that, but every single time you download, you're changing your registry. Every single time you change your registry, you don't know if that's going to affect something else that you previously installed. Because sometimes registry files are shared by different applications. So if, you know, product B changes this part of the registry that product A needed to run, you know, you don't find out till a week later, you start up product A, and it's like, how come this isn't working anymore?
Exactly right.
It was funny because when I was at ABA Tech Show, I was hanging out with Amy Derby, who's a law firm blogger, up like over by where the windows are, where people are walking away, walking around in the streets. We were in one of those little tables there. And we were just talking, all of a sudden this guy like bangs on the window and is smiling and waving at me. And I have no clue who he is. And I'm like smiling and waving back. I'm like, Amy, who is that? Help me, help me. She's like, I don't know who it was. I'm like, it could be Matt Homan. I said, but he had on sunglasses. I wasn't sure if it was him. Sure enough, he walks around. It was Matt.
Yeah, we had a pretty good mini version of the Tech Show crowd at Legal IT in Montreal, actually, with Ross and Craig. Kevin O'Keefe was up there, Brett Burney. Dominic Jarre, of course, because that's his show at Legal IT.
Right, but that was kind of funny. No, you were pretty much exactly, out of everybody there, you in person are exactly the same in person, online, you know, you're just you. You're just a nice guy.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I want to take this opportunity to thank you for listening. I hope you not only enjoyed today's BYOB, but that you found the information to be useful. For those interested in learning more from and about Ben, you can visit his website at www.rolandshore.com, or you can follow Ben on Twitter. He's at bshore, B-S-C-H-O-R-R, and you can also search for his company's Facebook page. For those of you still listening for the $1 special offer, thanks for your patience. Any BYOB listener who signs up for a $1 account through my site's $1 page and sends me an email to podcast@legaltypist.com will receive initial account setup assistance free of charge. This office is perfect for those less techie or listeners who don't want to know how things are done, just that your calls, voicemails, and faxes are properly routed. Go ahead and visit my page, legaltypist.com/OneBox, O-N-E-B-O-X. And once signed up, send an email to podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, at legaltypist.com, and I'll take care of the rest. I'm always on the lookout for feedback. By all means, if you have any comments, questions, or ideas for upcoming podcasts, please contact me at andrea@legaltypist.com. Thanks, and I hope you have a prosperous day.